This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, 10th of January, 2020. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking newspaper. Liz and Gordon Legg have edited the extract this week. And so we'll begin with our usual regular notices. The first is to say that if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please check the box first to see that it's plugged into the mains, and then you can telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. And as you listen to the recording, remember, you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And just one more note for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear and click download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent, first on the list. So let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle. Our readers today are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
And Peter Walker.
Hello.
I am your presenter, Ros Lydiard. So moving on to the news, here are the headlines. Debenham spared in the latest cull of stores. City prison slammed over self-harm figures. Heritage days fierce. And the first headline story from you, Claire, please.
City Debenhams spared in latest cull of stores. The Winchester branch of Debenhams has avoided the latest round of cuts by the struggling firm. The chain on Friday announced 19 store closures, including its store in Southsea. It says the closures are needed for a rescue plan announced last year, and up to 50 are set to close. It has around 160 shops across the UK. Debenhams has stores in Southampton, Portsmouth and Fareham. The Winchester branch has been on the High Street for decades and was previously called Sheriff and Ward. Chief Executive Stefan van Steenkist is reported to have said, "We are working hard to implement the transformation of Debenhams. Despite a challenging retail environment, thanks to our colleagues' hard work and our investor group's commitment, we are progressing with our turnaround." The Southsea branch will close on January the 19th. An estimated 140,000 jobs have been lost in 2019 because of store closures as customers switch to online shopping.
City prison slammed over self-harm figures. Winchester Prison has higher levels of self-harm than any other local prison in the country, a damning report has revealed. A recent chief inspector of prisons visit found significant deterioration since the last report in 2016. Recorded self-harm incidents have doubled since 2016. Seven prisoners have also taken their own lives since then, three of them in the last 12 months. Other reported concerns include safety, accessibility for disabled prisoners, and violence. The report, written by Peter Clark, who visited in June and July last year, says Winchester was not safe enough. Arrangements to receive new prisoners were slightly improved, but still not good enough. Almost a quarter of respondents to our survey said they felt unsafe, and well over half of all prisoners reported feeling victimised. The mandatory positive drug testing rate had fallen from 30% to 16%, suggesting that some supply reduction initiatives were having an impact, but 59% of prisoners still thought it was easy to obtain drugs in the prison. There are two parts to the prison, the local part, Category B, and a Category C unit for resettlement. Violence remained rare on the Category C site, but it had increased markedly in the local prison, particularly against staff, says the report. Overall, this was a disappointing inspection. It added, access to the reception was still via a flight of stairs that caused problems for disabled prisoners. The local site had no adapted cells for disabled prisoners, and the Category C site, one. The number of incidents involving the use of force had increased significantly. There had been 260 incidents in the 6 months leading up to the inspection, compared with 162 in the same period before the 2016 inspection. This has been attributed to many factors, including lack of staff experience. 70% of the staff had less than 2 years' experience. The report also says some prisoners had asked for halal utensils on several occasions but were not provided with them. Some prisoners could not shower every day, and others also complained about access to clean clothes. Following the last inspection, 54 recommendations were made to HMP Winchester. The service achieved 13 of these, partially achieved 5, and did not achieve 36. Recommendations this time include having officers wear body cameras. Despite most of the report damning the prison, some aspects were commended, including the delivery of health services, the food and behaviour and training work for prisoners. The Howard League for Penal Reform had responded to the report. Francis Crook, chief executive, said, "Turning around prisons like Winchester is one of the biggest challenges facing the Secretary of State for Justice. It can be done, but it will require a commitment to reducing the number of people behind bars." A new year should herald a new start to protect staff, to reduce crime, and to prevent more people being swept into deeper currents of despair. The Chronicle's contacted the Ministry of Justice and awaits a response.
Heritage Day's fears. The future of a festival celebrating Winchester's heritage hangs in the balance as dedicated volunteers scale back their commitment. Winchester Heritage Open Days, known as HODS, has been unlocking buildings usually closed to the public, offering talks and walking tours for 25 years, and the programme has been ever-expanding. But now, organisers behind the annual festival have announced that they will be taking a step back to take a different approach, meaning that the face of the event will change this year. Lead volunteers Nikki Gottlieb and Becky Brown have revealed that, after dedicating much of their time to the event, a new solution was being sought to organise things. But after 18 months of work, a resolution has not been found in time for this year's festival. The pair have said, "Running the hub and providing a central booking service, marketing and registration support is resource and time intensive, involving many hours of unpaid work during 2019. Long term, this is not sustainable, and so throughout 2018-19, we have, alongside running the 2019 festival, been reviewing the organisational arrangements, researching other HODS hub models, and discussing options with key partners such as Winchester City Council. And after talks with partner organisations, funding has not been found for a festival manager in time for this year's affair. We have identified a potential long-term and sustainable framework, but unfortunately we have not been able to secure funding or resources for a robust solution in time for 2020. Therefore, during this interim year, we shall be turning our attention to fundraising for a much-needed festival manager, and we will be seeking widespread support and help with sponsorship, venues, gala dinners and more. The lack of a solution has meant that this year's festival has been scaled back, with speculation that there could be around 50 events instead of the 100 plus usually held. Unlike in previous years, venues will now have to register their own events on the national website, organise their own volunteers, arrange insurance, and take a leading role in promoting. Nikki and Becky said they love what they have built up over the past few years and are keen to ensure Heritage Open Days remains an integral part of Winchester's cultural programme. But they are now calling on members of the public to help them find a way forward and employ a festival manager. They said, "We are reasonably confident with the support of your readers, sponsors and key partners that we will be successful in our fundraising events. We have lots of exciting ideas and plans for this year and beyond. However, if we are not successful, then what happens in 2021 will be dependent on how this year goes. And so it is very difficult for us to say at this early stage." With over 140 events last year, Winchester Heritage Open Days was the largest heritage festival in the country.
And it's time for the death notices now. Alexander, Evelyn Alexander, peacefully in hospital with her family on the 19th of December, aged 86.
Andrews, Brenda Andrews, passed away on 29th December, aged 82.
Conway, Mavis Mary Conway, died on the 29th of December at St Catherine's View, aged 87.
Every, Simon F. Every, peacefully on Saturday the 14th of December at the Dower House, aged 90 years.
Excel, Alex Excel, passed peacefully in Winchester Hospital on the 23rd of December, aged 65 years.
Rivet Karnak, Lady April Rivet Karnak, died peacefully on Boxing Day morning, aged 82 years.
Sheltimer, Joanna Sheltimer, known to all as Anne Marie, passed away peacefully at home in Alsford on the 28th of December, aged 83.
Shepherd, Roma Helen, née Rogers, Shepherd, peacefully at home on the 27th of December.
Tubbs, Anne Tubbs, peacefully on the 2nd of January, aged 83.
Underwood, John Brian Underwood, late of Abbots Anne, sadly passed away on 7th of December, aged 91.
Thank you. And moving on now to Christian comment, and it's contributed by the Reverend Canon Mark Collinson. He's the contributor this week with a call for more light, please. Thank you, Claire.
The 12 days of Christmas are over. The festivities cease, the decorations come down, and the good intentions to eat less, drink less, exercise more, and find a better balance of well-being kick in. What I find hard at this time of year is that even though we have passed the winter solstice, the dark days continue. Things should be getting lighter and brighter. The weatherman said that the day after the shortest day was 1 second longer. Big deal. It feels as though it's going to take ages before we get to work and back in daylight. This week, Christians celebrate the Epiphany, which is an odd Greek word that refers to Jesus revealing who he is. The festival goes back to the time when the wise men came from the east to visit Jesus, presumably Syria or Iraq. Whilst our traditional nativity scenes squish up the Christmas story into a neat package, In fact, the wise men with their gifts never made it to the stable with the shepherds. Sorry if that's a disappointment for you. As the gospel writer Matthew records in great detail, the wise men from the east consulted King Herod because they thought he, as king of the Jews, would know about the birth of his successor. They had seen this new king's star rise in the east, and as it traversed across the heavens, they were drawn to Palestine. Matthew tells us that Joseph and Mary were at this time in a house, not a stable, and he doesn't use the same word for a newborn infant as the gospel writer Luke does. Matthew uses the word for a small child. Imagine Mary and Joseph's surprise to have wealthy and distinguished professors' types turn up, giving symbolic gifts. The wise men signify the fulfillment of prophecy from hundreds of years before in the prophet Isaiah. The people from all nations will come to the light that God shines into the world. The birth of Jesus is relevant not just for Jews, but for people of all ethnicities, every culture, every race, every language. In the introduction to his gospel, the Apostle John picks up this theme of light as Jesus comes into the world. He says the darkness cannot overcome the light. In fact, he uses a word that is hard to translate. It's as if the darkness cannot understand the light, or possess it, or overtake it. Darkness cannot stop the light, nor grasp it, or own it. The threats of war that the new year brings are the last thing any of us want. The news from the Middle East is not good. Let's pray that these dark days pass quickly, and the light of God will bring peace and hope for us all in this year ahead. And that was written by the Reverend Canon Mark Collinson.
Thank you, Claire. And we are on to letters to the editor this week. We have 8 for you. It's a mixed bag. And I think I'll ask Richard to start us off, please.
Yes. And my first letter comes from Keith Webb of Winchester, and it's called A True Blue. It's pleasing to learn that other correspondents have added their comments about Steve Bryan wearing a red tie at the count after his extremely lacklustre election campaign, which I believe he never expected to win. He had for some time been under extreme pressure from the local Remainer elite, who'd wanted him to represent their views in Parliament, and he never learned the lesson that he would have earned so much more respect for having always towed the Conservative Party line rather than succumbing to local Liberal Democrat machinations. As I said in my original letter, he was very fortunate to have the party wit restored. But I think the time is now right for the Winchester Conservatives to start looking for a new and really strong, true blue candidate to stand in Steve Bryan's place. As I so many times said when, as a member of the party, I attended a constituency meeting, we should look for a traditional, looked outside the traditional social ranks for a candidate who may perhaps wear a blue collar, but would never, ever wear a red tie, or even worse, a bright yellow one. The recent election has now revealed that conservative values can be classless, and that ladies who lunch and their associates are no longer the best people to influence the choice of candidate. Keith Webb, Quarry Road, Winchester.
And this one is entitled Cars in City. It is perhaps not surprising that the Liberal Democrat administration on Winchester City Council used the Cabinet meeting on December the 23rd to push through large numbers of proposals and plans that would be unpopular and show yet again how ineffective they are. They clearly view 2 days before Christmas as a great time to bury bad news. One of the issues that I highlighted at that meeting was the proposal to charge for evening and Sunday parking. This is bad news for businesses in Winchester, and equally bad news for the many of us who live in the countryside and are reliant on cars. At the moment, our retail, restaurant and visitor sectors are facing unprecedented challenges. The internet is eating away at high street sales. As local traders struggle, the number of shops they have are reducing. All of this means we need to make our high street and leisure offering more desirable to make people want to come here. Frankly, there is little enough at present, with central Winchester hoarded up and nothing happening. £5 million of public realm improvements grant lost through the City of Winchester Trust's interference and the area around the Brooks looking tired and unappealing. Introduce evening or Sunday charges and you will give people another reason to go somewhere else and one less reason to come here. Most of our district is outside the city. To get in, they need to use a car. And once they are in the car, they can go anywhere. They will be less inclined to come here if they have to pay, and even less inclined if we drive our businesses to the wall or away because less people come on a Sunday or in the evenings. This is a bad idea. Let's not do it. And this from Hugh Lumby, City Councillor, Upper Mearn Valley Ward.
This letter is from Bob Bland and it's headed NHS Cop-Out. After waiting nearly 3.5 years for surgery to correct stenosis of the cervical region of my neck, I was scheduled for an operation at Southampton General Hospital on January the 7th. Having signed consensual paperwork and mentally prepared myself for the operation, I was called by the hospital at 3:23 p.m. on the 6th, informing me that my procedure was cancelled. The NHS legal obligation following a cancelled procedure is to offer another date within 28 days if the operation is cancelled on the day or whilst at the hospital awaiting surgery. Here's the cop-out. Non-clinical reasons for cancelling a procedure, in my case no beds available, does not fall within the 28-day legal obligation. Amazingly, if I met the 28-day criteria and been informed of a new date which was not convenient, I could choose to be treated on a different date. Furthermore, if I was not offered a new date within 28 days, I could choose to stay on the list at Southampton General or be treated at another time and hospital of my choice, paid for by the NHS. Because my procedure was cancelled the day before my operation, the 28-day legal obligation does not apply, and as such, I have the right to start consultant-led treatment within a maximum of 18 weeks from referral for a non-urgent condition, as stated in the NHS Constitution. To wait the length of time I have to get a life-changing procedure, only to be kicked back into the gutter, is so unreasonable it beggars belief. It is no wonder individuals end up with mental health issues which are more debilitating than their medical conditions, and we all know where this can lead to. Bob Bland, Upton Grey Close, Hairstock, Winchester.
First Choice Cafe. Colin Crofts was saddened to read the article about the closure of the cafe at Winchester Guildhall. When my wife and I come into Winchester, we often head to the cafe as our first choice eatery. It's one of the few reasonably priced cafes in the centre with good access, especially for wheelchairs and prams, and comfortable seating, even outside, for those sunny days. The layout encourages small groups and family gatherings. It always seems busy whatever the time of year, and its loyalty scheme is a good idea. It's so disappointing for the staff who lose their jobs, and we've always found them polite and welcoming. It's hard to see what good alternative uses are envisaged. Even if there is interest from local providers, would this result in a move creating another empty space elsewhere? Colin Crofts, Ormsby Drive, Chandler's Ford.
And this one is called Change the Name. So, the City Council has decided, through lack of support, to lease out the 1871 Cafe, which forms a small part of the Guildhall, reported in the Chronicle of January the 2nd. It was a mistake giving it that name in the first place. People have often asked me, why that name? The answer is that the Gothic-style Guildhall was built between 1871 and 1873 by Joseph Bull and Sons of Southampton at the cost of £20,000. It should have been called the Saxon Cafe, as that area of Winchester is full of Saxon history. Before it was converted into a cafe, this section of the Guildhall was known as the Saxon Suite and used regularly by local groups such as Winchester Horticultural Society. One reason it has not paid its way is that there are 8 cafes and restaurants in close proximity. I have counted them. I wish whoever takes it on good luck, and please change that name straight away to the Saxon Cafe. This from Phil Yates of Tower Street.
This letter is headed Heartless. It was heartwarming to read in the Chronicle on Boxing Day that 40 Syrian refugees have resettled in Winchester under the Vulnerable Persons Resettlement Scheme. However, just before Christmas, there was some very bleak news for refugees from Syria and elsewhere. Boris Johnson's Brexit proposals have dropped a pledge to preserve the right of unaccompanied child refugees to be reunited with relatives in the UK. This right was included in Theresa May's proposed agreement. These children have already fled their homes and have travelled to Greece, France, and other EU countries, hoping to be reunited with their loved ones in the UK. Boris Johnson's action is preventing them from doing this and is putting children at risk of injury and death. I very much hope that our MP, Steve Brine, will follow up his commendable opposition to a reckless no-deal Brexit last year by opposing this heartless measure which puts some of the most vulnerable children in the world at great risk. Sue Jessop, Fordington Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Mrs. Dollery thinks the flats plan is bad news for Winnell. On the editorial comment, Chronicle January 2nd, you may feel it's good news for more housing at Winnell Flats, but for many of us living here, it's bad news. We are the worst polluted area in Winnell, and now the City Council is proposing to fell 3 beautiful trees and take away the meagre space we have at the moment, not to mention the small amount of green space. This area used to be a lovely place to live. I've been here 50 years and seen the flats turn into a ghetto. The people proposing this action do not have to live here, but the case is not in my backyard. We have many problems now at the flats, so I suppose we could look forward to many more in the future. Ludicrous. As for the space being unused, it is housing many cars as a car park. Where are all these cars going to go? Mrs. P. Dollery, Braxton House, Winnell Manor Road, Winnell.
And in contrast, Simon Lever thinks this is good news. I have always championed the idea that the Conservatives and Lib Dems in the City Council should sit down together, present and receive ideas, and move forward united with a viable plan. Those either seeking smaller properties or enabling people wishing to step onto the ownership ladder through affordable homes can be a realistic goal. The plan to build 75 homes in the Winnell area is to be applauded, especially as the City Council is indeed unified regarding the plan. Both parties are committed to creating 1,000 affordable homes over the next 8 years. Such unity is a breath of fresh air, demonstrating that open cooperation is a reality and serves the locality admirably. The location in Winnell would seem to be ideal, with a good bus service and a feasible walk or bicycle ride into the town. Regarding middle-class gentrification, it is inevitable but not necessarily a bad thing, as the spending power contributes to the city's finances and money spent locally supports businesses where employees maintain job security. Local spending ultimately filters down to the not-so-well-off. Those who commute on a daily basis essentially give to the economy without taking up living accommodation. Further, new residents will pay council tax, thus adding to the city's coffers. Winchester, being one of the most expensive and desirable places in which to live upmarket property, is at a premium. Further good news is that the Half Moon and Spread Eagle pub has reopened. Hopefully, the village pub will also serve as a local shop, thus providing combined benefits for the community. Mostly positive news this week. From Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
And we're moving on to Your Say now, which Claire is going to read for us. Thank you.
The question this week is, petrol prices are rising again, and we asked people what they think. Pete Trott, who's 40, communications manager of Springvale Road, it's disgusting. We help the economy in the places we commute to and get punished. And Eleanor Pick, who's 52, a retail worker of Sparsholt, I don't drive, but I hope less people will drive after the price rise. It's time to be eco-friendly. Dave Clark, who's 46, property manager of Eastern Lane, it's because of the bombing in Iraq. Not a bad price for one less threat to the world. And Dan Robinson, who's 23 and a chef of Hairstock Road, I guess it could be blamed on Trump, but I don't drive far, so it won't really have an impact on me.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Does anyone have any views on that? Richard? Peter? I'm worried about how high the prices will go ultimately. But
we've got to stop driving petrol-driven cars, haven't we, Anne?
Well, there we are.
There is one thing. We were in the States just a couple of days ago, in fact, and petrol is one third of the price over there, but the cars are much bigger and so they pollute more. So there's your balance.
And the cars are getting bigger here too.
This is true.
Much more pollution.
We drove a 2.4 litre V6. We weren't exactly contributing to the pollution problem.
Well, thank you very much, Claire, for that and for your comments, both of you. And let's move on now to the editorial comment. And they say Heritage Days is a victim of its own success. It would be a sad day if the Heritage Open Days are scaled back. Organisers say that the event has become too big for volunteers to organise, and whilst they look for a full-time manager, they are reducing the size of this year's event, but with a view to returning all guns blazing in 2021. The Open Days have grown into an horrific event, celebrating the heritage of Winchester and its district. It has not been introduced by a local authority or a national quango, but has evolved organisations from the ground up, over the years, as most of the best things do, such as the Hat Fair. As a former capital of England, heritage will obviously be a big deal in the city. Knowledge and memory of the past should be a key part of the public discussions. Without knowledge of the past, we may find one day that we're in danger of forgetting who we are as citizens. Heritage is not simply about taking nice photographs of the cathedral or the Westgate. Jews fundraising for a statue in Jury Street of medieval woman Licaricia, murdered largely because of her religion, are well aware that it means much more. And next we have first person. Yes, that's right, Richard, first person, please. It's Khalid Aziz, and he advises, first, try to be happy. That's yes. One for you, please, Richard.
And I wonder if anybody else can spot just a hint of political bias in this piece? I don't know. What a difference a few weeks make. Avid readers will have seen that in my Hampshire Chronicle piece on General Election Day, I advocated that, whatever your political persuasion, a vote that ensured the return of a government with a commanding majority was undoubtedly the best way to go. Be careful what you wish for. It seems the country took my advice, and so naturally I am shamelessly taking full credit for the election result. Tuning in for the exit poll at 10 p.m. on election night, I'm sure few could have anticipated such an outstanding and surprising result. Poor old Laura Kunzberg, the BBC's political editor, looked like she was chewing a wasp as she attempted to make sense of it all, particularly as the lasting memory of all her reports during the election campaign seemed to be ended with the version of "It's too close to call" or "Everything's up for grabs." Who knew? Well, clearly not Miss Kunzberg, nor indeed it would appear any of her counterparts on the other broadcast news channels. Were they suckered by the Conservatives not wanting to admit how much it was all going their way? Perhaps they were hobbled by the strictures on public broadcasters under the Representation of the People Act, which, in terms, precludes them from suggesting that one side is so far ahead that there was bound to be a landslide. Whatever the explanation, political pundits didn't even get close to predicting Boris's 80-seat majority. Was it getting even halfway right, really on a par with a double-decker bus being located on the moon or the spotting of Elvis buying a burger in Winchester High Street? In a world of plural media, this surely has to change in the interests of truly informing the electorate. Whatever. It looks they'll have 5 years to get their act together for the next time. What with the Christmas and New Year festivities, not much has happened post-election, save for the immediate passing of an act to guarantee Brexit, in name at least, by the end of January. As Boris returns from Mustique, hopefully suntanned, relaxed and happy, if he's any sense, he will reflect on the fact although he has magnificently won the war, he now has to win the peace. No doubt he can dig up from his classical education some Greek or Roman who originally coined such a felicitous phrase. He started well with his trip up north, but he'll need to put in many more motorway miles to bring the region's well-deserved prosperity. In the run-up to December the 12th, I detected a real nervousness in the country. It was as if we electors were poised with a darning needle held over a livid and tumescent boil. Plunging the needle in would undoubtedly cause short-term pain, but oh, the relief as the suppurating pus drained away.
Oh, dear.
Now we seem to have elected more suppurating pus. Oh, no, sorry, it doesn't sound that. Now in January, it really does feel as if a boil has been lanced, and I hope I'm not being too romantic in saying that there appears to have been a sea change in attitudes. Often it's simple things. New Year drivers seem to be much more polite and accommodating at road junctions. Hopefully this is an indication of the country coming together. Goodness knows, there was enough negative and divisive thinking as Brexit tore us apart. Now it's decisively settled and there's little chance of going back. We should resume some kind of consensual harmony, as we're all better off when we work together. There should be no crowing by Brexiteers in victory, and no more of that, "You silly children, you really didn't understand what you were doing," hand-wringing from Remainers. It's all about attitude. If we really want a happy and prosperous new year, we have to start off by being happy, and then prosperity will follow.
Thank you, Richard. And
well, well, well.
We'll move on to Peter now, who has the letter from the Westminster, which comes from Flick Drummond, and she is MP for Meon Valley. Thank you.
Thank you, Ros. And as they say, this is the letter from Westminster. As this is my first letter from Westminster, I would firstly like to thank all the voters in Meon Valley, and I look forward to representing everyone regarding of how they voted. I would also like to thank my fellow candidates. I know how hard they worked, and I also know how tough it is to lose. I enjoyed meeting many people and tried to knock on doors in every village during the day. We found out early in the campaign that people were not keen to come to the door in the dark, but we discovered pub meetings worked very well. To that end, I will continue to hold Meet Your MP events in pubs and will publicise them on my website. I also aim to update people by email, so let me know if you would like to be on my mailing list. I personally answered just under 500 emails during the campaign, but because of regulations on data protection, I will need your permission to send out my regular updates. There were several issues that came up on the doorstep that I will be working on. Climate change was one of the biggest, and I will be campaigning to ensure new Meon Valley housing developments are sustainable. We have several big housing projects, and we need to make sure that communities receive good public services and communications. Which brings me on to another issue, broadband and mobile coverage. In some villages, it's impossible to receive a mobile signal. In other areas, broadband is too slow. And there are many businesses or people working from home these days. So this is going to be a priority. I will update on progress and work with local councillors and the government to make sure we can see some improvement. At Westminster, we hardly had time to draw breath after the election before we were back to business in Parliament on the following Monday. I would have not had it any other way. Although I have been an MP before, I was encouraged to attend the induction training, and it was a good opportunity to meet some of the new 109 Conservative MPs, many of them from northern and midland cities and areas which had never before returned a Conservative. As the PM said, people lent us their votes. We should never forget that they can change their mind at the next election if we don't do a good job. After the first couple of days of signing on and organising my new team, it was straight into work and the Queen's speech. The most important priority was, of course, Brexit, and we passed the second reading of the withdrawal bill through the House of Commons on December the 19th. It will now be going to the House of Lords and come back for any changes. I was also very pleased to see our domestic agenda, which sets out a variety of measures to support workers and families, enhancing workers' rights, and supporting flexible working, so crucial for anyone with caring responsibilities, plus the establishment of a new Office for Environmental Protection, which will be welcomed by many residents in Meon Valley. There is then a busy agenda for 2020. I hope you will all have a successful 2020 and look forward to meeting many of you during the year. This from Flick Drummond, Meon Valley MP.
Thank you. And now we're moving on to Belgarum, and we've got three items this week from Belgarum, one for each of you. So let's start with you, Claire. Thank you.
This one is headed, "It's in the bag for thieves." There's a high-tech shoplifting and low-tech. Police in Winchester arrested three women for stealing £1,300 worth of fragrances from city centre stores with help from a skirt bag. In the past, many shoplifters would carry with them bags lined with tin foil in which they stashed their stolen goods to avoid detection systems at the doors. Skirt bags are back to basics.
Well, I never. I didn't know that.
That's where you've been going wrong all these years.
Yes, that's really interesting news. At Let's have yours, Richard.
Well, I have a photograph here, which is headed 3:15 p.m. Christmas Day. And this may be the only day of the year when Broad Street in Alresford is empty of people. Normally, it's the busiest thoroughfare in the market town. Dr. Robert Pleming of Ashburton Road, Alresford, took the photo at 3:15 on Christmas Day. Sun was beginning to set, all shops were shut, and most people were at home, listening to the Queen.
Oh, right. Thank you, Peter.
Family sleuths branching out. Just before Christmas, members of the newly formed Winchester branch of the Hampshire Genealogical Society, HGS, met for some swapping of childhood memories from their various parts of the country. From tangible stories surrounding a selection of spoons and photographs, to tales of being an evacuee and to being related to a phantom milkman. The object was to find some homegrown talent for speakers at the forthcoming meetings and to get to know each other better. Elaine Boyes brought books and a publication stall and talked about the new HGS website. There was a lot of inspiring chat over a table full of tasty seasonal food and drinks, with a big thank you to Paul Pinhorn, the Hampshire chairman of HGS, who has steered a group of members into a cohesive group. The task now is to find out what is your family history New Year's resolution, with a discussion planned on what people want from the group, their interests and experience, and any specialist skills too. Speakers have been booked for the coming months on the topics of writing up your family history, how to get started, using DNA to further your research, and much more. The next meeting will be at Littleton Millennium Memorial Hall on Thursday, January the 16th at 7:15 p.m. for a 7:30 start. New members will be made very welcome.
Thank you very much. Well, now we're going to move on to historical items. And as ever, starting 200 years ago, Monday, January the 10th, 1820. Lady Mildmay, in addition to her usual and customary bounty to the poor at this season, has this day ordered 6 chaldrons of coals to be distributed among the poor of Twyford. G. Ricketts has presented 3 chaldrons and a half to be applied in a similar manner. And the next item under 1820. On Monday last, 6 of a most extraordinary size and weight of the Herefordshire... I will begin this again. I'm really sorry. Let me begin. On Monday last, an ox of most extraordinary size and weight of the Herefordshire breed was slaughtered by Mr. Daniel Penn, butcher of Basingstoke. It was bred by Lord Sherborne on his estate, and the weight of the carcass, exclusive of head and hide, was 99 stone.
One 100 years ago, Saturday, January the 10th, 1920, just one item on this. The ball on behalf of the funds of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, which was held at the Guildhall, Winchester last night, had many of the enjoyable and successful characteristics associated with the event before the war came, and for 5 terrible years put an end to social festivities. Indeed, there is an all-important point on which the Committee of Promoters are greatly to be congratulated, that upwards of 500 tickets were sold, which means that this year's ball is a record.
And 50 years ago, Saturday, January the 10th, 1970. The 1960s bad farewell in a way few people will forget. 1969 giving the best summer weather of the decade, with high temperatures, low rainfall and much more sunshine than the previous year. If those balmy days of June are most easily remembered, it should not be forgotten that other months contributed to an outstanding year. October in particular was the driest and warmest since records began, and rainfall was generally lower than in 1968. The year had an unpromising start. Rain fell on most days in January, heavy at times, and rainfall for the month was considerably above a year ago. And secondly, the cost of running Hampshire's police force is expected to rise by more than £750,000 next year. Income, however, is likely to go up substantially, 11.5% more than the original estimates for the current year. Total expenditure for 1970-71 is estimated at £7.7 million, members of Hampshire Police Authority were told on Monday. This was an increase of over £780,000 over the original estimate for 1960-1970.
25 years ago, Friday, January the 6th, 1995. Unsurprisingly, in a year when flood stories made many of the early headlines, Winchester's 1994 weather proved dismally wet, and that's official. Rainfall figures for January up to December 28th reveal that 1994 was even wetter than 1993, which was itself an extra damp year. Only June and July of 1994 avoided significant downpours. Rainfall levels for the year up to December 28th were measured by J. Wood at Littleton, North Winchester, at 995.4 millimetres, that's 39.18 inches in old money. This compares with the 38.02 inches recorded by Clifford Layton of Winchester's Andover Road North during 1993. The flooded-out residents of Hambledon can personally testify to the appalling start to the year's weather. January rainfall measured 125.4 millimetres, with the icy weather leading to a drop in temperature to 0.6 degrees centigrade on January the 4th and 17 ground frosts over the month. February was colder, with temperatures dipping to 0.75 degrees centigrade on St. Valentine's Day, and 19 ground frosts over the month. But the rain eased off, if only slightly, at 86.3 millimetres. The second section. Talks on the problems faced by Portsmouth and Southampton football clubs in relocating to new sites have been held by senior Hampshire County Council members with representatives of the two clubs. The leader of the County Council, Mike Hancock, with Alan Lloyd, Chairman of the Planning and Transportation Committee, and Peter Bell, Assistant County Planning Officer, met David Deacon, Vice Chairman of Portsmouth Football Club, and Southampton Football Club Director, Brian Hunt. Their discussion covered a number of points. The implications of the two recent decisions against proposals by the two clubs for relocating to new sites. Options for the existing football grounds at Fratton Park and the Dell. Possible relocation to nearby sites if these exist. The possibility of a ground sharing project between two football clubs. Mr. Hancock said it would be fair to say that neither club was over-enthusiastic about the ground-sharing idea, but both recognised that it is an option which will have to be seriously considered. Talks between county councillors and club representatives were wide-ranging, but no sites were seriously considered at the meeting and no decisions were made. There was general agreement that it would not be in anyone's interest if there was yet another long drawn out planning process from which neither club was able to satisfy its ambition to relocate a stadium fit for the public in the next century.
Thank you very much, Claire. That was a marathon for you. And here are the lighting up times starting on Saturday, the 11th of January. The sun will set at 4:20 p.m. And on Wednesday, the 15th of January, the sun will rise at 8 a.m. and will set at 4:25 p.m. On now to items of general news, and Richard has the first one for us, please.
Children miss out vaccinations. Hundreds of Hampshire babies have missed out on important jabs meant to protect them from potentially deadly illnesses, figures reveal. The British Society for Immunology has urged the new government to deliver on its promise to develop the UK's first vaccine strategy to protect communities against nasty diseases. Young children should get the so-called 6-in-1 jab, which protects against 6 serious infections, including polio, whooping cough and diphtheria, in the first months of their lives. Public Health England data shows that 287 children in Hampshire who had their first birthday in the first 6 months to September missed out on the vaccination. The British Society for Immunology said the uptake rate across England for the 6-in-1 vaccine among one-year-olds has averaged around 92%. Low levels of vaccination coverage matter, as it means that these diseases have the potential to spread within our communities, infecting unvaccinated people, with young babies and people with compromised immune systems particularly at risk. We urge the new government to deliver on its promise to develop the UK's first vaccine strategy and to fully fund immunisation services to ensure our communities are protected against these preventable diseases. He also urged parents to make sure their children get the jabs. He added, if you're worried your child hasn't received all the doses of the 6-in-1 vaccine, do make an appointment at your surgery. It's much better to get your child vaccinated than risk them catching one of these nasty diseases. Babies should have 3 rounds of the 6-in-1 vaccination at 8, 12 and 16 weeks of age.
And this one is entitled Service Sees Rise in Advice Seekers. More people are turning to Citizens Advice Winchester District for support. The organisation has revealed an increase in the number of people turning to their advice service during the year 2019 compared to 2018, with benefits, debt and employment being the most common advice areas. In 2019, the Citizens Advice Service in Winchester and Bishop's Waltham helped 5,462 clients. That's 375 more than in the previous year, with 13,706 issues, which is over 1,000 more issues than the previous year. The rise in the number of citizens, the rise in the number of clients was around 7.5%. The Citizens Advice Service in Winchester District has existed for 67 years and is an independent charity staffed largely by trained volunteers from the local area. The service provides free, confidential advice to anyone, regardless of their situation or circumstances. Leslie Rose, Advice Services Manager for Citizens Advice Winchester District, said, "We are here to support everyone in society that needs us. And during times of economic uncertainty and massive changes to the benefits system, it's not surprising that more people are turning to us for help. The people we serve through our local network are often amongst the most disadvantaged in society, with the greatest needs, and our volunteer advice team does a wonderful job of helping these individuals find a way forward." Citizens Advice celebrated 80 years of service in 2019. And although much has changed in that time in the way that the service is managed and delivered, the one thing that has remained constant is the demand for a free, independent advice service within the local community. Citizens Advice Winchester District offers a drop-in service in Winchester and Bishop's Waltham and also runs weekly outreach sessions in Alsford, Denmead and Wickham. Advice is also available by phone, web chat and email.
Pause.
Dorothy celebrates turning 100 with Bash, a retired school dinner assistant and Winchester resident, has celebrated her 100th birthday. Dorothy Rowe marked the huge milestone with her friends and fellow residents at Brendan Care Meadway in St Cross, Winchester, where a party was held for her on December the 21st. Previously from Hyde, Dorothy attended St Bartholomew's Primary School and St Mary's Senior School in Winchester. During the Second World War, she initially worked in a military uniform factory in Winchester before receiving engineering training in Southampton. She then worked for the duration of the war in an engineering works in Banbury, making parts for military vehicles. Dorothy married Frank Rowe in August 1945, and their son, Earl, was born in September 1946. She worked as a school dinner assistant at St Bartholomew's Primary School, subsequently St Bede, from 1953 until her retirement in 1984. She was a parishioner of St Bartholomew's Church, where she was baptised, confirmed and married, and was a founding member of the church's Open Group, which she attended into her 90s. During her retirement, she enjoyed regular trips out with Mervyn's coaches and attended the Royal Artillery Association Club, where she made new friends at both. Speaking about her life, Dorothy said, "I'm enjoying life at Brendan Care Medway. I'm very happy and comfortable here. I love it when my three grandchildren and five great-grandchildren visit and relish the time I spend with them. They call me Nanny Park because we used to live next to North Wall's recreation ground called the Park to locals."
Railway boss makes pledge to do better. The new boss of South Western Railway says the company service has not been good enough. Mark Hopwood, who started work as managing director, said he was determined to find a resolution to the strikes which have blighted the network in recent months. Mr. Hopwood joins the company with 30 years' experience. He said, "It's my mission to drive through positive and make positive impact for South Western Railway passengers. Frankly, our service has not been good enough in recent months and years. I also know that the recent strikes have had a very significant impact on our passengers and staff, and I am determined to find a resolution. There's been no sign of an end to the strikes on the region's trains, and passengers' frustration has been compounded by a 2.7% fare rise." Mr. Hopwood made five commitments to passengers: increase the number of trains running on time, introduce new and refurbished trains, to be open and honest about the company's efforts and problems, to remove obstacles to staff providing the help and advice passengers need, and to be approachable and accountable.
And another one relating to transport, this time buses, entitled "Buses Return to the Silent Streets." It is several years now since the Friends of King Alfred buses moved their famous running day from a usually chilly January the 1st to the balmier beginning of May. For one long married couple, the annual event on New Year's Day has a special meeting. On the number 7 bus to Sparsholt, driven by Chairman James Freeman, they explained on arrival at Sparsholt Church that they were about to celebrate 60 years of marriage. Leslie and Sheila Miles, who now live in Overton near Basingstoke, were born and brought up in Sparsholt, and their regular journeys to and from Winchester on the bus were on the bus where they did their courting. So the latest trip was very special, as they remembered their marriage ceremony in Sparsholt Church on January the 2nd, 1960. They received a round of applause from their fellow passengers when they shared all this. Friends of King Alfred Street Buses has continued to provide free nostalgic rides on the old King Alfred buses on New Year's Day.
A exercising in Tina's honour. A group of Winchester friends got their hearts pumping every day in December to raise nearly £6,000 in memory of Tina Jury. She was a popular local runner who clocked up over 100 marathons and still continued to train, even during chemotherapy treatment. The money will now be donated to Winchester Hospice and Wessex Cancer Trust. Tina, who lost her life to cancer in the summer, had regularly taken part in an annual December running challenge called Markathon. As a tribute, Miranda Rocksmith, with the support of Tina's family and local personal trainers Heather Terry and Joe Little, set up Tinathon and invited those who knew Tina to take part. The challenge was to do at least 30 minutes of high-intensity exercise, such as running, power walking, a gym session, park run, and swimming every day in December, including Christmas Day. Thinking only a few people would take part, Miranda set an initial fundraising target of £1,000. But before the month had started, over 130 people had signed up from as far away as Ontario and California. Participants paid £31 to sign up, which went directly to Winchester Hospice, and if they missed a day, they had to pay a fine of £5 to either the hospice or Wessex Cancer Trust. It is hoped that Tinathon will become an annual challenge and a lasting legacy for Tina.
Thank you very much. And I'm sorry to say that that's all we have for you this week. But before we go, another reminder that Mary Davis is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 711 998. Now we'd like to thank all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition, and to our editors, Gordon and Liz. And of course, many thanks to our readers, Claire.
Goodbye.
Richard.
Goodbye.
And Peter.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roz, until the next time, goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible? And again, we hope your week continues well, and goodbye from us until the next time. Goodbye.